Hi, and welcome to the Inside Out Security Show. I'm your host, Cindy Ng, and I'm joined by security practitioners who will introduce themselves. And today's icebreaker question is, what piece of technology have you seen that has too much added technology for technology's sake, or something you wish we have that's not taking advantage of existing technology?
This is Chris Kaiser. I think the obvious choice for this one is from the news, Juicero, if anyone's heard of that so far. I think that's the
been flooding
one that comes to
feed.
Mind. Yeah. If anyone hasn't heard of that yet, it's basically a juicing machine or a juice dispenser of some kind, basically, and it just squeezes a bag of juice, and that's all it does. And I don't think we need that.
I'm going to vote that motion sensors in rooms that turn the lights off while you're trying to record a podcast are an unnecessary technology. This is Mike Buckby, by the way. I vote they're unnecessary for Cindy because she keeps waving her arms to keep the lights on while she's talking to us.
Hi, this is Killian. And I think pretty much all of the junk they stuff in cars anymore is almost entirely unnecessary. I mean, I know Mike's Teslas would disagree with me, but I'm pretty happy with my old truck from 2002. It has a radio. I wish it had an auxiliary port. It's the only thing it doesn't have. But other than that, you don't need to be able to watch Blu-rays and play your Nintendo Switch, if you can find one, in your car while you're driving.
I'm mostly laughing. Just the not that Mike would disagree with me. Mike's Teslas, which have achieved sentience and drive themselves around, they would disagree with me.
I just have to make that clear for our robotic overlords.
Yeah, fair enough.
Wait, what about the camera that helps you back up? You don't need that?
I don't need that. My truck comes with a rearview mirror.
I live my life in such a way that I never go backwards. Always looking forwards, always reaching for the stars.
You're like a shark, Mike. Can't swim backwards.
Yeah, you can't do it. It's not
unless
good.
Unless it's Deep Blue Sea. There's a movie reference for somebody out there.
So as always, if you're a regular listener and enjoy our show, please go to iTunes to rate and review the Inside Out Security Show, and we'll put you in the running for a deck of our InfoSec cards that's based on the Cards Against Humanity card game. And to figure out how to do this, go to veronis.com/review. And I like to say this in the very beginning because we need more reviews so people can find us.
Yes, we have stacks of these card packs to give away. It is quite likely that if you put a review in, you will be getting one of these nice expansion packs.
Okay, so for today's show, the reason why I asked about what technology might have too much technology for the sake of technology is that I feel like even though our gadgets are new and exciting and it's made our lives easier in so many ways, when it comes to tech security, we don't have to get so complicated. And so it's actually more important to go back to the basics and understand foundational security concepts so that when the situation is appropriate, you're able to creatively use your foundational security knowledge depending on the situation. And I think that's exactly what France's presidential election taught us. So regardless of which side you're on, it's a great example. They basically created honeypots and had a plan in place to control the narrative and counter whatever their opponent or adversaries had to say. And they were basically winning on the security side by a landslide. What impressed you the most in their election and how they handled it from a security perspective?
What I thought was really interesting from this was that, you think of, a data breach. Oh, this is like taking actual information out of a company or organization and then using that information against them. What this was making up the information to make it appear that there's a data breach, and mixing that along with a whole bunch of other information to try to cast doubt on things or to try to, pull off a PR stunt. And to me, that was the really interesting part of this, that this goes beyond purely technical thing. This is a PR. This is expectations management. This is all of those things in terms of thinking about, how to guide companies on this and how to think about it for ourselves. I think this moves it. Well, even if your security was perfect, you still need a plan for a data breach because of this sort of situation.
I mean, I thought the kind of interesting portion of it was tipping the scale, making the attackers have to really work for the potential data by feeding them false information, feeding them false potential credentials in phishing attacks, it made them invest a lot more time and effort. I mean, unless it's a targeted attack, which just seems like it was, but in a lot of cases, some of these attacks are very driven by least resistance. So to make them have to kind of tip the scales and work for it, sort through the data, determine which credentials work and not, it makes the attackers look elsewhere in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I thought it was a really interesting tactic. It kind of reminded me of a tactic that a lot of the record companies used to use back in the day for piracy, where they would seed intentionally fake copies of records on things like SoulSeek and LimeWire and all of those, so that people would have to sort through all of the fake copies of the new whatever band it was and eventually give up and not try and pirate stuff. It's that, but taken to an entirely different level where it's, you know, potentially sensitive documents instead of the new record. I thought it was kind of cool that they were just intentionally creating noise to ward off or frustrate attackers.
Coming back to the U.S., where we've seen all week the news is all about the FBI director being released from his duties. And what's relevant with this story in our space is what happens after someone leaves an organization? There's an article that addressed this a bit. What are some of the main takeaways?
Actually, this I think actually connects quite well with our previous topic. I think a lot of problems happen because there isn't a plan in place. And we'll get kind of talking about the plan with Comey in a minute. But I think a lot of people operate under the assumption that, oh, this is not something that'll happen to me. So they don't have a plan in place, which I think is more detrimental than almost anything else. But again, rolling right into the Comey section, hopefully the FBI does have a plan in place. There should be some type of, I would imagine, kind of step-by-step guide that they've developed. According to the article, this doesn't happen very often, but you'd think there has to be a contingency plan for it. But imagine they'd have to cut off all account access immediately for everything to prevent him from logging in anywhere. Then physically seizing all of the assets in his office to secure those, and then probably a procedure to get his physical assets on his person if there's anything stored locally on there.
I don't know about you guys. I've never been involved with the removal of an FBI director, but certainly IT, and I think the lessons from this are, you know, how do you provision access and deprovision access as people, you know, enter and leave an organization or even just move around within an organization. And I'm a really big proponent of making that scripted, of doing that with PowerShell script to add things in. Now there's a lot of different services that will even help with that for the cloud-based services, you know, adding and removing SSH keys from the GitHub organization and things. Our identities now, our digital identities are spread out across so many different systems. It's just near impossible to track it all manually and to remove access when it should be. This isn't the message of the article, but just my personal experience has been, in particular, things where you're OAuthing to them, they never get like dealt with the right way. Like I'm still like from two or three jobs back in organizations I wish I could escape from.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, Mike, too. And some of the gotcha there is when systems all have their own account provisioning process without automating it. I know a friend of mine, I'm sure he doesn't listen to the podcast, so I can talk about him. He left one of his jobs, and on the day he turned in his notice, they had cut off all the accounts that they knew about. But there were several others apparently that they didn't know about, or it was not part of the provisioning and deprovisioning process, that, as far as I know, they never got cut off. I hope he notified them about it, but it's some of those glaring oversights. And it wasn't anything important, but it's still a documentation problem as well. They don't track the provisioning and deprovisioning. And if you can automate as many of those things as possible, Mike, as you said, it just reduces the likelihood of errors.
There's a interview with a person named Ross Anderson. I've never heard of him before until I read a transcript. He is a professor of security engineering at Cambridge University, and he's one of the founders of the field of information security economics, which I found really interesting. And he's someone who has lived and had so many different professional experiences, and it really felt satiating that he was able to put everything that's going on in business and security and in politics. And even though he's an engineer, he really gets that despite technology, despite privacy and security, what he understands first and foremost is it's about the business. So for instance, how Microsoft really perfected the model of get it out first and then we'll perfect security in versions 1, 2, and 3. And oh, by the way, I don't know if you guys listened or read the part where he even mentioned the cuddly stuffed animal with the always on mic. What really resonated with you guys?
To me, what resonated was that almost the attacks and like how attacks are happening is just so fluid. And that as systems have become harder to penetrate, as they become more secure, that the attackers are turning to the users as the soft, squishy part that can be exploited. And that, you know, tricking people out of passwords and phishing and things like that. And that it's very, that it's not really about like, oh, our encryption key was too small, and so they used an army of supercomputers to break it. No, they sent an email saying like, hey, this is your boss two levels up in the organization. You need to log into this site and take this for me right now as a new requirement. And, you know, it's a phishing site. And that's a much cheaper way to do the attacks, and that it cuts across all those layers of security that were put in place from a technical standpoint.
Yeah, I think what kind of got to me was, and this goes back to what Killian was saying before about, you know, having a truck that has just the basics of technology in it. The section where he talks about car manufacturers and being able to, you know, have computers in every car and everything like that. If there is a flaw, they can fix it easily. But it also means that, you know, that same methodology can be used to send something that's malicious out to these cars. Or if there's a bug in this software that inadvertently breaks a very important system, you can have catastrophic results. So it's one of these things where it's sort of a double-edged sword in that sense, where it can be, you know, we can fix this problem real easy, but we could also cause a lot of damage with, or, you know, have someone try and cause damage to us with just the same relative ease. That was a little bit spooky for me, for sure.
It's interesting to ground ourselves with his piece and then to also look at the next two articles that Mike found.
Dr. Neil Krautz, I don't think I'm saying the name right, but he runs a Tor hidden service that provides a front end to the Internet Archive. And so this is in the Tor network, basically almost like a proxy in front of that, so that people can access the Internet Archive anonymously. And what he found was that there were a number of bots that were performing basically an implicit denial of service attack on his service. And so this is a great article in terms of like debugging and identifying this. And it's a really interesting story about how he dealt with this. So he actually named each of the bots that was doing the attack, and he was able to take some steps to knock them off. And the really interesting one is he used a zip bomb, which is a gzipped file, and you can change around the encoding so that when it opens, it is a huge increase in file size. So what he did was these bots that were running through and trying to copy every single file on the Internet Archive, he made this bomb that he fed to them. And so it took 100 kilobyte file, and then it blew up to 1 gigabyte on the back end. And he just kept feeding them this until the machines ran out of disk space and crashed. And so he did that. And then there's more troubleshooting and debugging about a whole bunch of different internet protocol stuff that I just find really interesting. And so to me, this is a great article in terms of learning how to do this type of really high level debugging, lots of interesting things about DNS, Tor, how to deal with a denial of service attack and identify different bots. Just really, you know, nitty gritty stuff. Highly recommend people take a look at it.
I'm kind of disappointed that it wasn't like a straight up attack over Tor. That's what the link looked like it was.
Well, that's the interesting thing. Like we talk about this a lot, like these sort of very explicit attacks of like, oh, I'm trying to knock their server offline, or I'm trying to break in and steal a bunch of stuff. But a lot of times, especially in terms of dealing with it, it's very hard to tell what is happening. Like I've been involved in a lot of situations where, oh my gosh, it's a bunch of hackers and they destroyed the server. And then you find out like, no, it was the junior programmer who checked something in overnight before, you know, testing it, and it accidentally blew up the server. You think, oh my gosh, it's, you know, a denial of service attack. And like, no, we just didn't set our site up right. And so, you know, when Google scanned it, it took it offline because it was requesting information too fast. You know, things like that. And it's hard to look at a log file and from that divine the intent of the people making those requests. So
that brings up an interesting point, Mike. I'll play devil's advocate for a second. So for exactly that point, it's hard to kind of figure out what's going on based on a log file. where does the author of the article cross the line when he takes these machines offline, where he deliberately feeds them something to crash them? That's an interesting moral question, at least. I mean, they're doing something they're not supposed to. And as part of the article, they're ignoring a lot of the the robot.txt and other stuff that's supposed to prevent them from doing this. But then he actively attacks them back.
No, I agree. And it's not really discussed in the article, but they're probably hijacked machines. It's probably not someone sitting down and like, hey, I'm going to do this with my computer here. They're probably hijacking some random person's machine and then, you know, running this, you know, scraping of the Internet Archive.
Yeah, I thought that was just an interesting point to bring back up is, and it does tie back to kind of the parallels to the earlier articles about feeding the attackers false information. So, you know, where does that line get crossed? If we want to draw the moral line, I don't know.
And there was another article where people were concerned that HP's audio driver, it sounded like it was also doubling as a keylogger. And they're not sure if it was intentional spyware or something that their manufacturer did. It sounded like no one wanted to take responsibility, and it's been happening for about 2 years now.
And we talk about this a lot for Varonis, that at a certain level, you don't care if, you know, it's an insider who's, you know, trying to download 10,000 files off your network before they leave to another job, or you don't care if that same 10,000 files happen to be being acted upon by ransomware, or, you know, or it's just an admin who did something, you know, goofy with a script and it accidentally deleted those. Like, in all cases, something bad has happened to those files and it's messing up things. So you need to deal with that immediately and then sort of figure out the intent later. So whether or not it was intended as keylogging spyware, certainly that was the case. And what this was Hewlett Packard included as part of their chipset on an audio device that it would respond to certain keystrokes. And someone left a debugging feature on that put all those keystrokes out to a file. See Windows System 32, mictray.exe is installed. Like, you can check that right now on your computer to see if that's there. And if it is, you quite likely have this problem. And all the keystrokes were logged to users public mictray.log. And the problem with this is there's no indication that this is happening. And so it's entirely possible then for something else to come along, pull that log file and get the passwords that you typed in somewhere, come along and do something else malicious with that. It's interesting to me for all those reasons, and that it brings up good programming practices, good testing practices to look for security issues like this. And even though this wasn't malicious, it could still potentially be really harmful.
Yeah, this article reminded me of a couple other things. I mean, it does, at least from the outside, appear like it's just absolutely poor, sloppy coding practices. And there's a host of other kind of just basic issues here that should have never happened. But it also kind of reminds me of taking the shortcut in a little ways. If Chris had maybe mentioned about the audio before on LimeWire and things like that. If you remember, I think it was Sony Music Group got in that massive amount of trouble by basically putting what was repurposed as exploit tools on the CDs to kind of own your machine to prevent you from copy. It's a different intent, but it seems like really just terribly poorly executed decision making on the parts of these organizations to do something like this or to miss something like this.
It is such a fine line between security software that helps and hurts. In the competitive like PC gaming space, there's a lot of things like anti-cheat tools. And what they do is they inspect all the running processes on the machine to make sure that you aren't running something that, you know, is doing something malicious. One person's security tool is another person's backdoor.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I when I saw this article for the first time, I immediately thought of the whole XCP thing with Sony. And it's funny you mentioned that, Killian. There's a lot of parallels there with something was intended for a certain purpose, but completely could have been abused or misused in much more serious ways. I remember I was actually doing some street team work for Sony at the time. They had to recall a whole bunch of CDs. A lot of the bands that, you know, had that on there, like, it negatively affected how well they did, because no one wanted to buy that CD and put it into their machine. It was a whole mess. I'm interested to see what the fallout's going to be for these HP PCs. And you know, this scared me because I'm actually using one right this second. And I definitely, you know, went to look for that exact log file you guys mentioned earlier on. I'm lucky it didn't actually, it's not on my machine. I've never been more thankful for Beats Audio instead of whatever the the manufacturer is for this one. But yeah, it's something that's going to affect a whole bunch of people. I want to see what comes of this.
It's okay, Chris. I sent you that Sony CD, and I was able to root your machine and get the log file before you found it. So,
but you know what? That record was great.
That one U2 album. Oh, so good.
Hey, Mike, what's our tool this week?
It's Gixy, G-I-X-Y, and it's a tool to analyze Nginx configurations. Like earlier, I was talking about how I think it's very important. I think this is truly one of the things that separates classic older style traditional system admin and IT work from what's coming in the future is the ability to script and to manage all these things in a very procedural way where you're executing scripts, you're not just manually making changes to things. And so Gixy fits into that same sort of philosophy. So it's a tool to analyze your Nginx configurations. And so Nginx is a web server like Apache or Internet Information Server. It runs on all platforms. It's extremely fast. It's used by tons of very large companies. It's used by Cloudflare, which you mentioned a few times. It's very extensible. And how you configure it is with a file. Like literally there's an nginx.conf text file that you go in and put commands into. And what this does is it looks through that file for things that might be wrong. And so it's very easy to put something in that, just like we're saying about this other stuff, that it might be useful in one context, it might be a huge security flaw in another, that if you're using this in a certain like reverse proxy setup, oh, totally fine to have this open. Using it in a different way, oh my gosh, that just means you've opened up all your files to everyone on the internet. And so how I would see this used is that maybe it's part of a checklist before you deploy. It's part of your Git deploy scripts that this is run. And if there's any issues brought up that the deploy is halted and those need to be addressed before redeploying. So Gixy for analyzing Nginx configurations. So.
Thanks to Mike Buckby, Killian Engler, Chris Kaiser, and all our listeners for joining us today. If you want to follow us on Twitter to find some of the stories we're discussing, you can find us at infosec_podcast. Thanks, and we'll meet up again next week. Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.